Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the On Mission podcast by Grace Church, where we discuss global missions and how to live on mission, living out and proclaiming the good news of forgiveness that's found in Jesus Christ. I'm David Lawson, and we'll be talking about why entrepreneurial leaders are the future of God's kingdom. My guest today is Dan Owolabi, who's the executive director of Branches Worldwide. Dan, welcome.
Hey, it's good to be here, Dave.
Great to have you with us, and it's good to be not only a friend, but a colleague and a partner in the gospel. Before we get into our topic, and I do want to get right into it, but give us a little bit of an overview of what Branches does. What is Branches Worldwide and what is it they do?
Yeah, Branches Worldwide is an international nonprofit that works with Christian entrepreneurs around the world, Christian business leaders. And, you know, the big idea is that we are working with 30 leaders at a time for 30 years at a time from 30 different countries. And so, you know, ultimately, it's a long-term play. When we partner with an entrepreneur, we're really committing to them for the duration of their career. We believe that they can make a transformational difference in their community, and long-term support really is the key to making that happen. It's about being patient and watching them grow over time. But the idea behind that really is believing that if you have a challenge in a community, whether it's spiritual, social, economic, whatever, oftentimes, it's the business leaders in a community that have the resources and the relationships to really see that problem into its solution. And so those are the individuals who know what the problems are. Those are the individuals who can solve the problems with funding and finance. They're often the people who fund the work of the church. They build schools. They build clinics. They do a lot of really good things. And if you have those individuals in communities around the world, gosh, it's much, much easier to find solutions than it would be otherwise. So we engage those entrepreneurs in particular countries around the world.
That's really why I'm looking forward to this conversation, because this is a different way of looking at missions for a lot of us. Most of us, when we think about missions traditionally, we're thinking about something that's totally different from that. But the points you just now brought out, you can see, okay, yeah, I can see how entrepreneurial leaders, businessmen and women can really affect change in their community for the gospel. And so this conversation that we're having now really came out of a conversation we had maybe about a month ago or so, or a few weeks ago, where you made this, I think it's kind of a bold statement. I kind of led with it in the intro, but I want to flesh this out a little bit. Why is it that you said that entrepreneurial leaders are the future of the growth of God's kingdom around the world? What made you say that?
Yeah. That is a little bit of a bold statement, because there's a lot of people who might suggest other ideas. But here's why I said that. I think that, you know, ultimately God loves entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs at heart are individuals who are able to vision a future that doesn't yet exist, have the energy to kind of marshal resources to create that future, and they get a lot of excitement from doing that. And I think ultimately, when you look at the spread of the gospel around the world, it's different than it was before. A lot of times when you thought about the spread of the gospel, maybe in the 50s and the 60s and 70s, especially in the United States, you know, you're sort of reintroducing it to people who kind of already knew it. And you're looking for revival. You're looking for somebody to come, you know, become hot again. But the reality is, around the world, there's a lot of people, even in our own country, who have just never fully understood the gospel at all. And so entrepreneurial leaders are individuals who can go into places that really aren't warm. They're not like sort of leaning in and ready. They need to be introduced to the gospel completely from scratch. And so those are people who understand how to have cross-cultural conversations. They understand how to present the gospel in a way that is contextual for people. And those are people who understand how to develop strong relationships with people first before, you know, communicating the gospel. And we think entrepreneurial leaders are the ones that have the mechanism to do that.
So when you think about creative ways, you might have to draw from your bank of experiences of what some of your leaders are doing. But when you think about creative ways that entrepreneurs and businessmen and women are creatively introducing the gospel, what are some things that come to your mind? What would that kind of look like?
Yeah. So an easy way is to start thinking about just daily interactions. So oftentimes, if you're starting a business, you have just 1,000 different connections with people in the community. You have a relationship with your bank. You have a relationship with the supplier of your bread. You have a relationship with the customers. You have a relationship with the business down the street. You have a lot of relationships that are just, you know, what we would call quote unquote secular relationships. Well, if you do business with integrity, over time and you are productive and you actually are producing a profit and your business is growing, you really start to gain favor and influence with those people. They want to associate with you because they're interested in what you're doing right and they really want to be a part of that. Your bank wants to lend you money. The business down the street is asking you how to keep your employees. You know, your customers are excited about the product you're making. And so you gain all this natural influence and what I'll call momentum with people. When you say something as an entrepreneur, especially a successful entrepreneur, people lean in because they believe that you found something true that they want as well. And then if you're able to make it just a small leap from what you're doing within your business to the truth that you follow on a day-to-day basis and the principles and values that you hold true, suddenly a conversation about, you know, your business easily shifts to a conversation about the gospel. And people are still leaning in because they're like, what is it that's different about you and what you do? And so that's really where that translation happens.
It kind of comes back to that old statement that, you know, in this case, I'm not a businessman who is a Christian. I'm a Christian who happens to be a businessman. And I'm bringing that influence into my world. Yes. That's a good takeaway for all of us when we rethink everything that – when we have a conversation with somebody, hi, how you doing? What do you do? And that question, whatever follows the answer to that question – is how you're spreading your influence.
Yes.
I'm a Christian who is that. You know, I'm an athlete or I'm a businessman or I'm a student or I'm a teacher or I'm a professor. But first of all, I'm a Christian and I'm bringing that Christian influence into that. And that's kind of what you're talking about there.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. And I think as the Christian entrepreneur, Christian first, then entrepreneur, you know, who's leading a business in any particular region of the world, you know, you want to internally make sure you're leading with that Christ-centered focus. But externally, you want to make sure, and this is a nuance we really focus in on within Branches, you want to externally lead with the entrepreneur. I was in Thailand, and I know you've been there too. I was in Thailand in Chiang Mai talking to a guy, and, you know, we were talking about Branches and what it would look like for him to be part of it. And I asked him, what's the most important thing about running a Christian business? And he was running a coffee shop in the middle of the mountains in Doi Chang. And basically, he said, the most important thing about running my business as a Christian is to make good coffee. Like, that is the number one thing I need to do, because if I don't make good coffee, then people don't take me seriously and then everything just falls apart. And so recognizing that your public face has to lead with good business practices and just, you know, essentially people saying, okay, you have a life that's led with excellence. Let me find out why. And then that's where you start to have that conversation.
Yeah, well, it's the interest of other people above your own. The reason he wants to make good coffee is because people will come to the shop wanting good coffee.
You got it.
And my interest is that person. I want to deliver on that. And you've run in circles before with Christian and non-Christian business leaders alike, and there is a difference in how a Christian goes about his business. His product might not be better than the non-Christian's product and vice versa, but how he goes about it, his care for the people first, has employees, all that kind of stuff is different.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And the hope is over time, his product will be better.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
100%, it's the care for people. It's that sense that people are first is the most important thing.
Totally. So how do you see this influence fleshing out in the community? You have a Christian businessman or woman, entrepreneur, leading a business, maybe a small business growing into. How do you see this developing? Do you see multiple businesses? What kind of regional influence? How do you see the regional influence being impacted as a result of this committed person?
So oftentimes what we see is it happens in concentric circles. And so when we're working with an entrepreneur, first we talk a lot about their own character, their own vision for life. What does God want them to do with their life? Let's not just talk about making a pile of money and then retiring.
Right.
Like, what do you want to do with your day-to-day, every day? But then on top of that, we talk about your family, your influence with your kids and your wife or your husband, that kind of stuff. And then we move into your church and we move into your community and then we move into your country. And oftentimes what you find is that as they start to look for opportunities to develop more influence beyond just their church, everybody within Branches kind of knows, hey, I've got to take care of myself, I've got to take care of my family, I've got to take care of my employees. But once they start looking past their business and start thinking very specifically about their community, that's when things get exciting. We ask all of them to identify a problem in their community that they want to solve with the influence of their business. And so it could be a bunch of different things, but when they focus on that, suddenly they're able to see where they can actually leverage their influence in a way that changes lives outside of just people purchasing their products or working for their company. And that's where light bulbs start to go off, and they realize, I can make an eternal difference in people's lives simply by leveraging the influence God's given me. And so you start to see that happening on a regional level. And there's a bunch of different examples of that happening around the world.
So you're challenging, in part, you're challenging these entrepreneurs to identify a problem that might not be addressed only by their primary business,
mm-hmm.
that there might be another problem that they might be able to leverage the influence their business for. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right, yeah.
So when we think about, we're talking about business as mission in a way, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not in the traditional way, but we are talking about it that way.
Yeah.
How do you see what Branches is doing here and nourishing, fostering, developing? How do you see that interacting with what we would call traditional missions, where we're where we send people internationally from one land or one culture rather to another culture to introduce the gospel of Jesus Christ? How do you see them working, hand dovetailing, complementing? How do you see that working out?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of different ways that it intersects. You know, even just from the beginning, oftentimes we'll work with entrepreneurs in third world countries, right? Quote unquote third world countries. And you'd be amazed at how many people that I talked to, just talked to somebody just this morning who was saying the same thing, where their first interaction to Christianity came from a direct influence of a missionary. Like I hear stories, I was in Zimbabwe literally 2 months ago, and he's like, yeah, the church that I go to now that has 600 people was started by a missionary from Iowa, you know, who just came and started it, and then the church is there, and now I came to Christ.
Yeah.
And so you hear that real time, and you realize, oh my goodness, this movement has bore real fruit, and you start to see the value of that, and you get excited. On the other hand, you also recognize that, you know, once a missionary comes to a community, and missionaries know this typically, they're the ones to kind of, you know, be the tip of the spear, but it's the locals that really have to carry the torch and grab it and run for things to really explode. And so in that way, oftentimes it's business people who come alongside those local pastors or local missionaries. They're business people in the community that say, hey, I get that this church is growing because of funding from around the world, and you can have a house and your kids are here as a missionary and that kind of stuff because people are supporting you. But for this church to grow, you need a local economy to really fund this. And so those entrepreneurs and business people locally are the ones that really help things take off. We're the ones that help those individuals grow. We get really excited by watching local Christian business leaders explode their influence because of support from people around the world.
So. Yeah. We're talking with Dan Owolabi, who is the Executive Director of Branches Worldwide. We've talked about the spiritual impact a little bit, and I don't want to dismiss that. I don't want to set it to the side. You've alluded to other ways that these entrepreneurs can influence their community. So if it's possible to separate the spiritual from the other impact, what other ways do you see these entrepreneurs influencing their communities and even their countries?
Yeah. You know, a good example of this is in Great Britain. So we have an entrepreneur in Manchester. His name's John. Great guy. I talked to him just the other day. And he has a skate park that's growing. Now, a skate park is just kind of an unusual business because typically you're like, hey, you don't need a business around a skate park. You just have a skate park and people go skate. Well, there's a couple components to it. Number one, typically skate parks are just sort of open air places where anyone can just show up and do it. What he decided to do is build a business around it. So he enclosed a skate park, so made it indoors. That's the first thing. The second thing, he made it a safe space, a clean space. Typically, when you go to a skate park, it's just grungy, and the people who come in are just, you know, they don't really care. They're just there to skate and hang out their buds, and they smoke and all that stuff. There's a lot of things that tend to happen. And he said, no, we're going to have a clean place where people can learn to skate. We're going to have instructors here. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we're going to make it accessible for moms and dads and little kids and grandmas, and everyone can kind of learn and have fun because they love to skate and they want to see this happen. Long story short, he recognized that skating is a great way to build community and for people to learn new things and build inner confidence. And so in Manchester, very, very secular community, he said, we're going to build this thing and we're going to create a night, a particular night of the week that is just available to women, because there are so few women that are skating and so few women that feel that sense of belonging and that sense of accomplishment when they learn to skate. And so we got a lot of pushback. Hey, there's just a woman's night. Like, what in the world? Like, why can't we, you know? And so he really pushed hard on that. And there was maybe three or four that were coming and they wouldn't come back because there was a lot of very creepy guys who were hanging around.
Right.
But by creating that night, what he did was he created that community inside a community where they could feel accepted and someone could come alongside them and show them something that they wanted to do but didn't actually know how to do, and coach them and teach them and build relationships with them. Ultimately, it really exploded. You know, hundreds, thousands of women are coming on an annual basis. And it's exciting for him because he's able to see that community grow, and then he's able to develop conversations with them about, hey, you're valuable. This is why we created this special place for you. And they develop those real relationships. Then when he has those conversations about the gospel, people are much, much more receptive to that because you've already demonstrated that you care for me and that you love me and that you created this special place for me. So it's gone really well.
Yeah. Well, in a sense, you really can't separate the spiritual from the other part because you're bringing who you are into that circumstance just like he did. He had a vision for the community. He had a vision for what needed to be accomplished, could be accomplished, and he added value to the community because of that. And so you really can't separate out who you are. Regardless of what you're doing, you can't separate out the spiritual part.
Yeah. We talk about this a lot in Branches, that sacred-secular divide is just – it just doesn't exist. Yeah. You know, God is spiritual, and he's in almost everything. And so, yeah, that's good.
Well, leaders are the key, obviously. You talked about 30 leaders, 30 countries, 30 years, right?
Yeah.
Where do you find these leaders? How do you discover them? How do you vet them? Give us a – pull back the curtain a little bit there so we can kind of hear a little bit about what your process is.
Yeah. Well, that's the secret sauce, you know. The identification of leaders is one of the biggest challenges that we had to overcome. And what we found after a lot of trial and error is that there are certain places where these leaders tend to flock. I mean, a lot of the entrepreneurial leaders that we're looking for, they attend a church. And so you start looking in churches for those type of leaders. Mm-hmm. You also look for – there's a lot of associations around the world. You'd be surprised at the number of sort of groups of entrepreneurs that gather together and find each other in different regions of the world. And so we're able to find a lot of those and sort of tap into them, develop relationships and networks to identify the right type of people. So there's a lot of that. But once we do find someone that we think is a really good prospect, it's a long process. I mean, we're talking being a partner with them for 30 years, right? So you want to do your due diligence on the front end to make sure that you've got the right type of person. So there's three steps that we go through. Number one, you know, they fill out an application, right? And then all of a sudden they do a Zoom call, Zoom interview. We do three of those with them. So that's the first step. Mm-hmm. Second step, we actually send two individuals over to their country to meet them face to face. You'd be amazed at how surprised people are to realize that there's two Americans just showing up at their doorstep, flew out to see them. They want to meet their pastor. They want to meet their employees. They want to meet their spouse. They want to meet their kids. You know, those individuals are really sort of doing a 360 on their whole life to see, like, are you what you say you are?
Yeah.
And they'll do all these interviews with people. And so you feel the pressure mounting on the entrepreneur thinking, okay, these guys are real. And then the last part is the acceptance. It's putting them in front of the entire group of entrepreneurs and saying, hey, I think we're ready to invite, you know, John into the community. You know, what do you guys think? And then all of a sudden, you know, we extend the invitation to them and they're in. I remember extending an invitation to an individual in Costa Rica. And, well, you were there. Yeah, yeah. You met Pete in Costa Rica. Yeah. We'll talk about that in a second. And Pete started crying.
Did he really?
We were at his kitchen table.
Wow.
He was like, I can't believe this is happening. You know, just because he had been through so much as a Christian entrepreneur and because the process was so intense that when we finally said, I think you're the one that we're looking for, it was like, are you serious? Mm-hmm. Out of my whole country, I'm the one that you picked. So that's an exciting moment. It really gets everybody excited.
Yeah. Is it fair to boil that down as you're looking for a genuine faith and you're looking for good reputation, it sounds like to me, when you're going there, who is this man or woman really? And do other people recognize that too? Is that, do they have reputation in their community? Because if they're going to have a community influence, they need to have a good reputation.
You got it. Yeah. And that's one of those things where you can't fake that. Yeah. You know, like you can put down on the resume or you can send in a few references like, hey, my mom thinks I'm a great guy and my neighbor thinks I'm good. But when people show up and they ask, well, let me talk to your pastor one-on-one without you there, you know, suddenly your reputation is what it is. You can't go and make that up anymore.
Right.
Whatever you've accomplished to that point is what you got. So.
Yeah. What a lesson for all of us. You know, if someone were to show up at our door and ask those questions, have those conversations with our neighbors, with the people who know us the best, what kind of report would we get? Would we be qualified for Branches or not? I don't know. Now, the significant part of Branches ministry, not just Discovery the Leaders, is the support. You provide a lot of support for these leaders. Give us some insight into the kind of support that Branches provides for these leaders once they're discovered, once they're accepted. What does that support look like for them?
Yeah, you know, so I just want to differentiate just for a second the kind of entrepreneur that we're looking for.
Okay.
Oftentimes when you think of missions and entrepreneurship, you're thinking about people who want to start businesses and they have an idea and they just need a little bit of support, you know. And they're, you know, maybe a woman in Zimbabwe and they have a farm and they want some chickens so they can sell them in the market and they need some money to start, you know, that. We don't do that because we don't work with micro businesses and really small individuals. We work with people who have already been established for five or more years. They have five or more employees. They're already rolling. They get payroll. They get supply chain management. Like they understand those things.
Okay.
And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to take somebody from 10 employees to 20 or from 20 to 200. We're okay. really trying to give them significant influence within their community.
Okay.
And that's where that long-term play comes in. We know it doesn't happen overnight. It takes
right.
time.
Right.
Research also shows that there are some very specific components that make an entrepreneur more successful than others. Number one, having a mentor makes a massive difference.
Hmm.
Oftentimes, the reason why an entrepreneur doesn't make it in the market or whatever is because they just flat out quit. It just gets hard. And one day they look around, they're like, you know what? This stinks. I'm just going to go get a job. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't need this. Mm-hmm. But when you have a mentor next to you that says, hey, no, keep going. Mm-hmm. You've got something here. This is real. Mm-hmm. When you stick it out, when it gets really difficult, your chances of success go through the roof. And so having a mentor with them over that long period of time, typically mentors will pair with them for 3 years.
Hmm.
Having that mentor with them for that long period of time really helps them get past those dips where they want to quit. And so then they're able to actually make it to those high points.
Hmm.
That's the first thing. The second thing we do is we surround them with a community of other entrepreneurs. So those are people from around the world who are about the same stage of life, same stage of business. And they're talking about juggling their business and their families. They're talking about their church. They're talking about their faith. They're also talking about supply chain issues. And so when you see people around the world going through things and they're also being successful in the middle of challenging circumstances, you think to yourself, well, if they can do it, I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Case in point, I was talking to a friend of mine in Zimbabwe just this morning, and he said, I have a lot of conversations with one of the other branches leaders in Ukraine. And he's like, when I'm talking to that guy from Ukraine, when I'm talking to that guy, and he's telling me about how he's running his business in the middle of a war,
yeah.
he's like, it makes my inflation problem seem like nothing, you know?
Yeah,
and
right.
so then he said, well, I can, if he can figure this out, I can yeah. figure this out. And so
right.
then
right.
suddenly the chances of success as a business go up.
Yeah.
So we, you know, offer that community of other entrepreneurs from around the world as well. And the last thing we do is we offer funding. Mm-hmm. That's a major piece. These are responsible people who have amazing books and they understand how to run a business, but they can't get access to capital. Mm. They're like, I could build 4 more buildings and hire 30 more people and the market is there and I figured out the formula. I just can't get a bank to give me money that's not 50% interest.
Mm.
And so if you're able to provide that capital to them in a way that's responsible over time, suddenly their business grows and they're just thankful and everybody wins. And so those are the 3 things that we provide.
That's excellent. Yeah, I can see that would be a great value for people for sure. Mm. So tell us a little bit about the kinds of businesses, initiatives that you are seeing with some of your leaders around the world.
Yeah. Yeah. There's all kinds of things. You know, you would imagine there's different ways to make money. There's different ways to influence your community.
Right.
We have a video game developer in Canada. He's worked on some of the biggest games out there. He's worked with the creator of Nintendo. He's worked with the people who make the Harry Potter video games. He's done a lot of really cool stuff. And, you know, when we're talking to him, one of the things he talks about is the ability to make games that are edifying to God. Mm. They don't necessarily have God plastered all over them. They're not like, hey, this is the Noah's Ark video game.
Right.
You know, but they do have themes in them about redemption and about forgiveness. And so he really starts to, you know, play on those themes as he's creating games. We have the skate park in Manchester. We have a software company in Ukraine. We have a pig farm in Tanzania. We have a huge farm in South Africa. We have a car care company in Argentina. There's a school in Nicaragua. Wow. There's a clinic. There's multiple clinics in the Dominican Republic. There's a fish market in Costa Rica. There's just a lot of really exciting things that are happening in different parts of the world. In India, there's a school that's developing. So those are the things that we get really excited by.
Yeah. Talking with Dan Owolabi, who's the executive director of Branches Worldwide. Dan, I had a chance to go on a missions trip with you to Costa Rica with Branches.
That's
and
right.
I was introduced to Pete. You mentioned him earlier on. He has a really interesting maybe it's not interesting to you because maybe this is the standard procedure for a lot of your business leaders, but I was really intrigued with his business model and how he approached it and how he ran his business and then how he used his business to leverage this nonprofit he was doing.
Right.
So talk to us a little bit about that approach and kind of if I kind of spark some ideas for some of our listeners who might be business leaders about how they could kind of leverage their business anyway. So tell us a little bit about what he's doing and why it's working.
Yeah, yeah. Pete is such a great example of what our entrepreneurs are doing around the world. So he has a successful seafood business. I called it a fish market, but it's a seafood business where he distributes seafood all over the country. He has relationships with the Costa Rican president and the Costa Rican government. He does a really good job there. Long story short, though, the business is really successful. And as an entrepreneur, you recognize that there really is a very high ceiling to the amount of money that you can earn as an entrepreneur. I mean, it just goes through the roof once you really figure out the formula. And early on, he recognized this is not my business and this is not my money. And God wants me to do some things with it that are beyond my comprehension. And he felt God calling him to start an organization that builds houses for people who are basically in destitute situations within Costa Rica. Now, as an American, oftentimes we think, hey, you know, if there's people who are hurting around the world, I really want to go help. I want to do that kind of thing. And Pete's saying, hey, in my own country, I can do this. I can build a successful business and then use the profits from the business to fund this amazing thing. And it all stays within Costa Rica.
Yeah.
And we're able to share the gospel with people in a way that is tangible because we've just built them an amazing home. And so, you know, when you were there, you got to see what that looked like and experience that whole thing. Long story short with him, though, it's building a business that blesses his community.
Yeah.
And recognizing if I can figure out specifically how to bless my community, gosh, people are much more ready to hear the gospel because of my influence and because of the tangible things we're doing.
So. Yeah. Well, he's definitely an example of what you talked about earlier, where you're challenging these business leaders and entrepreneurs to look at a problem in their community and fix it. And so he's not fixing, certainly he's helping feed people with a seafood business, but the problem he's really addressing with his nonprofit is a housing problem.
Yes.
And I remember he was in the U.S. just a couple of weeks ago, and I sat down with him, and I started asking him a little bit more about some of the government housing. He said they're ovens. He said, you know, they're basically concrete, and it's hot there, and people are baking inside. And not only that, but he said the housing he's providing is like 50% larger than what the government is providing, and they've really thought through the engineering. They have this ventilation system, and it's environmentally beneficial because they're taking this scrap wood that would normally be discarded, and they're using it. I mean, they've really thought through this, and they've come up with a great model. It's really helping people out a lot.
I agree. And that's the point that we're making earlier in regards to entrepreneurial leaders. I mean, they're the ones who can identify problems and solve them, and usually the solutions work, you know, because they've built businesses that – you know, solve problems for people in the community. He's recognizing this housing issue, and he's like, hey, the government's not doing a great job.
Right.
Like, what if I just actually fix it instead of waiting on them to come do it? So,
I don't know how, maybe you know, I kind of want to move it to some application. What can we take away from what we're learning from branches here? So, maybe a good transition to that would be what you see Pete doing. Do you see businesses in the U.S. doing that? Are there business leaders who are following that kind of model that Pete is using, where they're using their for-profit business to fund something else that's addressing a need in the community?
There are some. Yeah, there. You know, what we find more often than not, we find three different kinds of organizations, right, in the United States. The first one is the Christian who owns a business. So that's it. Like, I am a Christian and I also own a business, and there's just sort of two separate houses that I live in. And on Monday through Friday, I'm doing my business thing, and maybe I'll be a little bit like shrewd, or maybe I'll be a little bit of a jerk, but hey, look, it's sort of separate from my faith. And then on Sunday, I'm a Christian.
Yeah.
We find that a lot. Then we find the Christian who's working hard to integrate their faith and their business together with their business practices, the products that they're making, the way they treat their customers, how open they are about their faith and how strategic they are about integrating it. So those are things we find more and more. Not very popular because it's really hard to figure out, but I think there are people out there who are figuring it out. Provia in Holmes County is another good example of a company that has integrated it well. It's hard to do, but they've done it. The third company that we see are the redemptive companies. Those are ones who have gone past that first stage of just being a Christian and owning a business, then gone past that second stage where they've sort of integrated their faith and their business together. The third stage is they're now using the profits from their business to really solve real social problems in the world. They're planting churches and they're building clinics, and they're doing really cool things with the profit from the business, recognizing that God has given us this profit for a reason, and there's things that we can do to solve problems in the world. So we see those to that degree. I mean, a lot more of the first one, maybe some of the second one, and a lot fewer of the third one. So we want to see more of that third.
So your challenge would be, be the third person, right?
You got it.
Be that person. The stewardship of what God has entrusted to you, right, for the benefit of other people. So if you're an entrepreneur or a business person who is listening to this, maybe that's something you could be thinking about moving forward in your vision for your business to go beyond the product or the service that you're providing to address a need or an issue that's in your community.
That's it. That's it.
Are there opportunities for someone who has been in business for a while, has been successful? Is there an opportunity through branches for mentoring, coaching, something like that, that somebody could get in contact with you about?
Absolutely, yeah. If you go to branchesworldwide.org, you'll find links to become a mentor, to become a donor. You know, even if you're listening overseas and you know an individual who could be a potential entrepreneur, there's places for you to become a leader. But yeah, what we're looking for are people who are rooted in their faith, have business savvy, and are good listeners. Because ultimately, when you're dealing with people cross-culturally, you've got to be a good listener.
Yeah, so if you're interested
in being a mentor, that's really the criteria we're looking for.
Yeah. Well, and these people, like as you mentioned, they have it on the ball already. I mean, they're already successful in what they're doing. You're not necessarily stepping into a startup kind of situation. You're acting as a colleague to bounce things off. Hey, this is what's worked for me. How's that work? How does that translate to your culture? That kind of thing. And there's probably a lot of give and take. You're probably learning a lot from the person you're trying to mentor along the way too.
100%.
Probably 100%. Happens. Yeah.
It's funny you say that because one of the criteria we have for identifying the right kind of entrepreneur is the word wow. As we're meeting with them, somebody within that interview section has to say, wow, this person is incredible. And that's one of the keys that we say, okay, they might be ready for us.
Well, the wow factor was there for me when I met Pete and I saw what he was doing. And the more that things unfolded, the more wows came out. It's like, wow, there's more of that. Wow, really? You're doing that?
That's right.
Wow, that's your vision?
Yeah.
Wow, you're doing that in this shop with this equipment? Wow.
That's right.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Right. Yeah. We were in his shop and it was like, wow, how do you produce that with this? Good for you, man.
Absolutely. Yeah. Talk about making the most of a little. That was something else. Yeah. The Lord, well, it's a loaves and fishes thing.
It is.
You know, the Lord just takes what you're faithful with and he multiplies it. And we see that in that situation. I'm sure you see it around the world as well with a lot of these other leaders. That's the business person. Let's talk to the person who is just the everyday employee, maybe not the person who's the entrepreneur, the business leader. You know, the Lord gives different gifts to different people, and we all have our place in what we do.
Right.
What message would you give to people who show up every day faithfully? My dad showed up every day faithfully 42 years for work and provided for his family and cared for us. And so there are a lot of those people out there who have ambition. They're just not a leader. They're not an entrepreneur, but they have a strong place in the workforce and in the work environment. What message would you give to them based upon what you've been learning?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, the reality is Branch's focus is almost exclusively on executives and entrepreneurs around the world, right? But the vast majority of people are employees. They work for someone else, you know, and they find joy in that. But there's opportunity for them to be the hands and feet of Jesus.
Yeah.
One of the things that you and I talked about in our last conversation was the idea that people spend most of their time at work. They spend tons of time at work. Most of their adult lives are just spent, a 30-year adult life is spent at work with other people. And if you're looking for an opportunity to interact with individuals who don't necessarily have a robust faith or no faith at all, the chances of you doing that at work are higher than anywhere else in your life.
True.
And so if you're looking for ways to really communicate the gospel in a tangible way, not like, hey, read this Bible verse and come back and talk to me, but no, I'm actually going to call you and I'm going to figure out what you need and I'm going to work with you to show you what Jesus looks like, that opportunity happens at work more often than anything.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things I found is that when people are working side by side next to each other for years, stuff happens. You know, people get divorced, kids leave, you get sick. There's just things that happen in people's lives that are painful. And oftentimes people are looking for real answers in real time while they're sitting next to you in your cubicle. And so they're saying, I can't believe my husband said this. I can't believe my wife said this. And you have those conversations. And in those conversations, you have opportunities to say, hey, you know what? I've been through something similar. And here's how I handled that. Here's where Christ came through for me. Do you want to hear a little bit more about the difference that it made in my life? Those are just strategic opportunities that you've got to look for.
Yeah.
You know, they don't just pop in front of you if you're not looking for it.
Yeah, your work colleagues see you during frustrating times, things that could be frustrating, how you're handling that. They're listening to whether you are gossiping, whether you're listening to gossip. They're and if you are sharing your life with them, they are watching you through the difficult times, the challenging times, the good times, the celebratory times, and they're seeing how you handle that. As a Christian, what you're hoping is that they see a stark difference in all of those.
That's it.
In the times of joy and celebration, times of sorrow, times of difficulty, they're, you handle that different from anybody else.
Right.
You're certainly handling it different than I do.
Yes, exactly. Right? And I wonder why, because I don't like how I'm handling it.
That's right.
You're handling it better than I would.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, I think we could talk for a long time on this, Dan. I'm really intrigued with what Branch is doing and grateful for your leadership of it. If people want to find out more, you have a website, branchesworldwide.org, right?
It. Yep, yep.
And you also wrote a book.
I did.
Yeah, Authentic Leadership. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, Authentic Leadership kind of came out of the experience I had as a pastor. So I was a pastor for about 10 years before I started at Grace as well. And, you know, one of the things I saw is when I had one-on-one conversations with executives and entrepreneurs and just average people, you know, one-on-one over coffee or in my office, people would lean in and say things to me that they would never say to anyone ever, not their spouse, not their kids. They would say it to their pastor. And what I found over and over and over again, you wouldn't believe this, was this underlying sense, even with some of the most successful people, underlying sense of insecurity. Like, I'm just not good enough. I have something to hide. I hope people don't find out. I have something to prove. I want them to know that I'm this, or what if it doesn't work? And they feel like they had something to lose. And so what I realized was that authenticity is a great antidote for insecurity. When you're able to be yourself in the service of other people, the best version of yourself, suddenly you are freed to do everything that God has called you to do. But insecurity just trips up so many people. So the book really is about that. It's about how insecurity is just horrible and how authenticity can be a remedy for insecurity.
Well, hopefully people look it up on Amazon and purchase it.
So. It just came out on Kindle.
Yeah, well,
so
there you go.
You can click and get it right now.
Look at all those options. You can get it right now.
That's right.
Well, good.
That's right.
And if people would like to reach out to you to speak to their group, to their church, to their event, that's possible too?
It is, yeah. If you go to bookdanawalabi.com, there's a opportunity to connect with me in a lot of different ways there. But yeah, there's articles and you can buy the book and you can, you know, connect to me directly there. So
okay. Bookdanowalabi.com.
You got it.
And that's OWOLABI.
Nailed it.
Danowalabi.com. Mm-hmm. All right. So bookdanowalabi.com. Encourage you to do that. Dan is a great speaker, very inspirational, and as you can tell, has a real heart for people. So I encourage you to reach out to him and maybe even your business group. Maybe you could be helpful to them there. So
It'd be fun.
Anything else that you want to leave us before we move on?
Yeah, absolutely. Dave, this has been a great podcast. This is fun. You are the most prepared podcast host that I have ever been. I've been on lots of podcasts, and we had multiple conversations and multiple meetings and set – I mean, well done. Like, that doesn't happen on accident. So this is a lot of fun. I enjoy it.
That's great having you. And maybe we can catch up another time as you grow these leaders and as you see God doing great things around the world. That might be an inspiration for people who find themselves in the same situation, but just here in the U.S. And, you know, wouldn't it be great if we had more and more people moving into that level three business leadership and really influencing their community for Jesus Christ? That would be, you know, because it levels up everything. And it levels up wages, it levels up employment, levels up families, levels up. And when you have a boss or a leader or an owner who cares about you, boy, it makes all the difference in the world. And what we bring as employees is I want him to succeed because when he succeeds, he succeeds, everything gets better.
That's it.
Right?
You got it.
And I not only affect this widget that I'm helping to make or the service that I'm helping to deliver, but man, I see that our business is solving a problem in our community. Man, you want to talk about something that provides some inspiration for people, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing like it. So
it.
For those of you who are business leaders and entrepreneurs out there, set your sights on that level three kind of business leader mindset. That'd be great.
You got it.
Well, Dan, thanks for joining us. Appreciate that very much. And thanks to all of you for listening. And we're glad you could join us for this On Mission podcast. We trust that our conversation has encouraged you to live on mission through your work, living out, proclaiming the good news of the life and forgiveness found in a relationship with Jesus Christ.